Life can feel overwhelming, but you don't have to go through it alone. On my podcast, From the Heart with Rachel Braithen, I share openly and vulnerably about everything life brings us and what we can learn by living with our hearts a little bit more open. Every Friday, a new episode brings you a new story with topics on self-care, motherhood, healing, and more. You are enough, just the way you are. This podcast is a reminder of that. Follow and listen to From the Heart with Rachel Braithen wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Sunday Skate on Sports Radio WEEI.
The first time in 39 years, the Boston Bruins have won the Stanley Cup.
Talking Bruins and the NHL.
Sure, old-time hockey.
Like, it is sure.
Yeah.
With Ken Laird from the Mutt and Callahan Show.
What a bunch of criminals. We ought to be in jail. That's all there is to it.
WEEI.com Bruins writer Matt Kalman.
Leave the killer out.
Sunday Skate is brought to you by Wise Snacks and by Star Market, the official supermarket of the Boston Bruins.
Beast is great. You know, we got a lot of losses.
Lace them up for some Beast Talk right now on Sports Radio WEEI.
Well, it's May the 22nd, 2019. It's a special edition of Sunday Skate, weekday edition, also usurping yet again.
Fight me.
The great Zero Pucks Given with Dale Arnold taking that channel over. And we're still at it, Matt Kalman from EEI.com, Bruins writer extraordinaire, NHL.com correspondent, because, of course, the Bruins are in the Cup Finals and have been for some time. Welcome.
I don't even remember what happened. Did they really win?
I missed the Sunday Skate since the last...
The voice you're hearing right now is not Ken Laird.
The last time the Bruins had played. You did a fine job, by the way.
Thank you.
Pete Blackburn did a great job. We got 2 hours this week coming up 8 to 10, and we've got pretty much the same topics Sunday that we will run through today. But it's official. The St. Louis Blues are the opponent, so let's bear down, as Rear Admiral liked to say.
I love bear down. We need to bear down, yeah.
Former member of Skate fame, dip into the Blues matchup. But first of all, you got to get Kalman, cranky Kalman, fired up, wound up like that hurricane siren right off the gun. How many new columnists and media members did you see over at the Bruce Cassidy
today was,
media?
Today was the day. Today was the day, the official like grand opening of Bruins hockey coverage from, you know, columnists, not only from Boston, but from Connecticut. You know, there were two Connecticut people quizzing Connor Clifton on his Quinnipiac days.
Oh, good, good.
And rehashing his rookie season. You have, oh my God, some of these Globe columnists, they've just been dropped in out of outer space. They're asking Zdeno Chara what it's like to be tall, what it's like to be old, what it's like to be, you know.
Have you done a story on the contrast between Chara and McAvoy?
I have not, because any defense partner for Zdeno Chara is going to be younger than him. There are no other defensemen in the National Hockey League. There are also going to be no players bigger than him in the National Hockey League. This has been the case for 15 years and will continue to be the case.
Well, we have the scrimmage tomorrow night, which has become sort of a topic. We've got the Backes story obviously rises to the top of the list because he's obviously a former captain of the Blues.
And Binnington.
Recently. Yep, and Binnington, the goaltending matchup. I don't know what's the most compelling of the whole bunch. How surprised are you to see St. Louis here? I guess let's start there. I mean, we did this a couple weeks ago with Carolina, and I think did our best to talk them up as a threat, but you nor I really felt that way.
Yeah, nobody did.
And, of course, didn't play out that way. This group, I'm finding a tough time really propping them up as they're going to push Boston to the edge, but they beat Winnipeg, who was my Cup final prediction, and they just beat a Sharks team that granted was banged up toward the end, but had them down 2-1 in the series, so they did have that ability to come back from a controversial hand pass call and everything else. And they did look like a team last night as they closed it out. That's pretty hot and rolling right now.
I think if you look at the two things they have that maybe if you can just compare them directly to Carolina, you start with the stable all-world goaltending they're getting. You know, Mrazek and McElhinney have been playing out of their minds, but then the Mrazek injury obviously affected him, and I don't think we ever really trusted those two guys to carry a team like they never had before. Now, Binnington obviously hasn't either, but since January to now, he's pretty much established himself as a number one goaltender. He doesn't necessarily give off the smell of a Andrew Hammond or a Patrick Laliem or whoever would come in and just be a flash of the pan, but even if he is, for right now, he's been in the zone, you know, second to Tuukka Rask in these playoffs.
I mean, Jake Allen was their number one.
Yeah.
Binnington, 30 starts this year, 24-5-1, a 1.89 goals against average, a 927 save percentage. And last year, he was in Providence because he had nowhere else to play.
Exactly.
Right? Was he on your radar at all last year? No, absolutely not.
I mean, you figure that the Blues didn't hold him in esteem because they had two goalies, they had to pick one to go elsewhere, and he was the one that refused to go to the ECHL, so he came to Providence, did a great job there for them. but he was only playing Saturday, so it wasn't like you would normally take a top goaltending prospect and play him, you know, twice a week in the AHL.
But he was a third-round pick. It's not like he was a nobody, right?
Right. So they've got this the other guy that's come up that's been the guy that's more highly regarded for them.
Carter Hutton.
Not Hutton, but the guy they still have, I think his name is Hushko or something like that.
Oh, right. Yep.
And so, you know, it's just interesting to see that he obviously played his way onto their radar, and maybe they didn't even believe it at first. I think he had a couple of starts in December when they had some injuries, and they kind of didn't ride him. And next thing you know, they're in last place in January. I guess they figured, we have nothing left to lose. And he's been red hot ever since. And I think the thing about him is not just his ability, but his demeanor. He doesn't seem to get rattled. He's played in some really tough places, been under fire under some games. You know, the Blues, kind of like the Bruins, kind of like most good teams, they haven't necessarily gotten all the offense they expect to get out of certain players. Braden Schenn only has 2 goals, and some other guys haven't quite produced. But when you have a goalie like that, you can get by with the secondary scoring and squeak by, and he's been great.
Well, you mentioned reasons they're a more impressive team, or at least more stable than Carolina appears to be.
And they're more talented than Carolina.
More talented. I think that would be the one. Vladimir Tarasenko is a household name in hockey circles. That being, I mean, it's a first-round pick. He's been there for 7 years now. And I saw the stat thrown out that since 2014, he's third in the NHL in goals behind Ovechkin at Tavares.
There you go.
So he's a star. Now, he's not making $10 million plus.
Right.
He's certainly affordable, but he's a guy who, the rumor was on the trade block at points this year.
Well, everyone was on the trade block with them. I mean, you figured when you're approaching January and you're in last place, you know, remember how many rumors there were that Schenn was coming to the Bruins, and we know the Bruins were being heavily scouted by them. Tarasenko, and even Pietrangelo was on the block. I mean, the people in Toronto were, you know, getting out the forks and knives, trying to like carve up the Maple Leafs or the Blues and put this guy on the Maple Leafs. What a difference maker that guy would have been! You know, as great as Muzzin was for them, Pietrangelo is a whole other level. But you got to give it to them that they stuck it out. I mean, to not be sellers at that point is kind of crazy, and to think of what they did. But you look at whether you want to compare it to Carolina or Columbus, you know, Schwartz. As terrible of a regular season he's had, he's been amazing in the playoffs. Probably there next to Binnington, their Conn Smythe. You know, he's their Marchand to the Tuca.
Two hat tricks. He had 12 goals.
12 goals, and he had 11.
11 in the regular season.
11 in the regular season. So when he's playing the way he's playing now, this is what they've expected out of him. So a lot more skill, at least established skill. I mean, you know, Tara Vinen clearly with Carolina was a guy we thought was going to be a difference maker. He went to sleep, and Aho, I'm still looking for him. I mean, that guy was terrible. So you don't expect that out of these guys the way they've played through 3 rounds.
And that's important, obviously, because the Bruins clearly have done a great job here throughout the run. Unlike last year when Braden Point's line outplayed Bergeron in the second round, they have shut down the opposing top line. And without question, Jaden Schwartz, Braden Schenn, Vladimir Tarasenko, that's the top line of the Blues. So they're going to get that matchup, you would think, right?
Yeah. Bergeron line and the crew, Carlo Pero, go against the Schenn line, and then Chara and McAvoy with whoever. You know, any of the other 3 lines can usually handle it against the the second line there,
which is the
O'Reilly line, because that's the heavier line. So, you know, you'd probably like, the more often than not, to have the Corrali line against those guys.
I mean, I love that matchup from a Bruins point of view.
Yeah.
Tarasenko has been a streaky guy. You know, he was hot here in this last series.
And Vlasic had his number up until maybe this playoffs.
Right,
so.
Right. I mean, there was talk that he's in a lull. What's going on? Mm-hmm. He's not engaged was one of the phrases
I think he's a guy you can wear down with physicality, and that's where Brandon Carlo's going to come in and have to maybe, you know, get a little bit more of a mean streak sometimes. As great as he's been, we know he's not putting people through walls that often, which is fine. You don't want to get out of position, and you want to play your game, but you might have to, you know, up that physicality a little bit against this guy just to kind of knock him off his game.
But the bigger story to me, I mean, obviously they're deep on the blue line, we can talk about that, but the fourth line matches with Boston's fourth line pretty comparably.
Yep.
They're hot coming in. Sundquist, Barbashev, and Steen. Yeah. All those guys were 10 goal scorers in the regular season. And even the third line, Bozak, we kind of ripped last year in the Leafs series somewhat, but he, Maroon, and Thomas are interesting. Yeah. I wouldn't say they're great or to
be feared.
No,
they've been a lot better in the playoffs, and they're a type of line that just can lean on you. And, you know, Maroon's huge, and it's going to be tough for. This is where, again, the test is going to be on the Torrey Krugs and Matt Grizzlick to see if they can really handle it, because every one of those lines is either a lethal offensive line or a heavy line, and, you know, 3 out of them is definitely heavy. And we've seen, you know, Grizzlick and Krug have been great, and they've completely proven me wrong about whether or not they can handle it. But now it will be kind of the ultimate test, especially when, you know, Grizzlick's going to be out there a lot probably against that Bozak, Maroon, Thomas line, and those guys are heavy.
Going into the last game, 42 points from their D, second in the NHL to San Jose. So either one of these teams, whoever was going to come out, you knew were, you know, propelled by the back end. Most of those were assists. 35 of the 42 were assists. So they're obviously good. and they're big, 6'2" yeah. plus across the board
right.
With their blue line. But we talked up Carolina's defense corps, and that was not a factor at all in the series. So how much better are they than what we saw with Dougie Hamilton and company?
Well, they're better, I think, just based on the experience and just based on the fact that they know how to be competitive at this time of year, maybe. I mean, I think that Carolina, even though they had Falk, he's maybe the only one that's Slavin, been around.
Yeah, right.
The Blues haven't been to the finals, but just 2 years ago they were in the or 2 or 3 years, the other play, the Sharks, they were in the conference
finals.
They had
two wins in the conference finals.
So they've at least been to this point. I mean, if you took the 12D, who would you pick first? You'd probably pick Pietrangelo, right? Or would you pick Slavin at this point if you're looking for someone to win right now?
Parayko gets the most praise, it seems like, lately, because he's hot. I mean, he's 6'6", and he's a shutdown guy. So it depends what you're looking for,
exactly.
I guess.
And that's a dynamic that the Hurricanes lacked also is – the size of that guy.
Yeah.
He's big and he skates, and that's going to be the matchup, especially on the road, that Pastrnak and Marchand are going to have to deal with, and Bergeron.
He and Bomeister.
That guy, him and Bomeister. Long, big, strong D that can cut off plays at the blue line, and no fancy stuff. You know, Marchand and Pasta, they like to get into the circus acts, and you can't do it. You got to chip the puck behind that big guy and get there first, and that's going to be a test, especially, like I said, on the road where they won't be able to control it. But we know Bruce isn't going to shy away from it. Those guys will probably get a lot of minutes in Boston, too, and they're going to have to put their nose to the grindstone.
Pietrangelo was the fourth overall pick in 2006. He's been there 11 years. It's hard to imagine that. He's 29. He is their captain. Joel Edmondson's the other guy that usually pairs with him. I don't know a ton about him. He's 25. He was second on the team in hits and fourth in blocked shots. Top penalty minute guy, so obviously he's just kind of a defensive defenseman.
Exactly. I haven't seen much of him to just know that he's big and strong. I don't think he's putting up the points the way you would want some guys to do. And again, that'll be the second pair, and we'll have to see how the Bruins forward lines kind of handle that. A lot of pressure on the likes of Charlie Coyle, Jake DeBrus to kind of get behind that guy and make him pay.
Robert Bortuzzo is a glue guy. I saw him in Pittsburgh quite a bit. He's a player favorite. He's always looked at that way, kind of a goofball. He and Carl Gunnarsson. But now the other kid from Salem.
Yeah, if Dunn comes back.
Well, Vince Dunn and also Zach Sanford, but he hasn't played much.
He hasn't played much, but Dunn was huge. I mean, Dunn was playing really well when he took the puck in the face in the conference final. And
Vince Dunn, 12 goals.
He's maybe the one that gives them the most offensive dimension, the guy that kind of moves the puck the best. And I don't think he might not be as big as the rest of them, so that's a dimension they maybe lack with him out of there. Gunnarsson is Gunnarsson. He's puts up some points now and then, but
32.
He's 32.
He's a journeyman guy.
Exactly. Got exiled from Toronto. Lucky him. And just the guy that you can probably take advantage of in the right situation. But Dunn would be a difference maker for them, and a guy that they'll miss. They'll miss his offense the way the Bruins have missed. I know it's sacrosanct to say, but they've missed Kevin Miller. Regardless of how well they've done, they missed him, and they're going to miss Kevin Miller in this round.
And he had a setback again, is the phrase.
I don't know if it's a second setback or they're just repeating, the first setback. But nonetheless, not going to see
look
him.
For him to
I mean,
up
really, it's almost bizarre that they wouldn't just say what happened here. I don't think he's coming back unless he's going to, unless they're playing a game on July 4th or something here. It's
No. And at this point, it'd be tough to put him back in with the way this team's rolling.
You're going to be rusty enough without doing that. So.
Now, like the Hurricanes, they had a rookie coach. Craig Berube's an interim coach, right? Yeah. He's not even had
and
that
tag removed.
And
he coached in Philly for 2 years.
So true. Yeah. It's not new to it. But this team surged. He was hired on November 19th, brought in as the interim guy. They didn't really take off until January when they were last in the NHL. I think everybody knows that story by now. But Mike Yeo was the guy that got axed.
Yeah.
Another guy that I know, he was a Michel Therrien disciple.
Okay.
And I know a lot of players hated him. I mean, as they did Therrien. So Berube comes off as this, hard nails guy, no nonsense, but I think he must be like compared to Yeo,
right?
The master drill sergeant, he must be a breath of fresh air.
Right. And the guy's had a hell of a career as a player, I think. I saw some quotes today from the Blues talking about just the fact that he was a role player. Which is like he was the ultimate role player, I think. That just says that he knows kind of more of what it takes and what and how to just interact with players, respond to players. And it seems like I think they have Larry Robinson over there coaching their D. You can't get much better than that. That guy is a defenseman whisperer for sure, in addition to being a Hall of Fame defenseman to begin with. And it seems like everywhere he goes wins. I think he was in San Jose for a while. We know, obviously, he coached the Devils. That's a huge thing to have on your staff. And they seem to have it together. And Berube, I didn't think that made much sense. He seemed like to be. He seemed to be a terrible coach when he's in Philly, and maybe,
maybe
much like Bruce in Washington, you learn from your mistakes. He, you know, he's another guy. He went back to the AHL before he went. You know, he didn't just stay in the AHL. He went. The Blues made him the AHL coach for a year there, I think, at least a year, and so that's always a sign too that the guy really wants to kind of learn and evolve and not just think he's ready to just jump right into another job.
Well, they were pretty active in the offseason at free agency. Not only Tyler Bozak they brought in. They've had, you know, the trades are backdated a bit.
Right. Well, they brought in Bozak and Maroon in July 1. So.
And Ryan O'Reilly was a trade from Buffalo. It's a couple years ago now, right? So they've maneuvered some parts there.
No, that was this year. Was
that this offseason?
Yep.
Okay. So for a while, obviously, that was not working out, but now it looks like those are pretty significant developments.
I think the O'Reilly thing worked out for them. I mean, regardless of what he was producing, I mean, that guy's just such a character glue guy. I mean, you put him on any second or third line in the National Hockey League, and he's going to make your team better.
He's their highest paid player.
I mean, he does everything. He's just, you know, he plays first power play. He plays all areas, and he's just one of those great players that does it. You know, he's kind of like their poor man's Bergeron, and we saw it in Buffalo. You know, he killed the Bruins a little bit with the Sabres, and.
He might be the key to the series, wouldn't you think, Ryan O'Reilly?
Yeah, he's definitely one of the keys. Obviously, he's going to be out there head-to-head with Patrice when they can get the right matchup they want, and it'll be interesting to see. Like, we talked about that Bruce is going to want Bergeron against Shen. We'll see how much Berube tries to get away from that and get O'Reilly out there, and, you know, that'll be where the face-off game will come in, the ice territory game will come in, whereas where the faceoffs are being placed and things like that, it's going to be tough, especially the second period.
He was like a 48% faceoff guy win, but had the most wins of anybody in the poker in the playoffs.
He takes a ton, right? Yeah, that's just it. I mean, he's just out there constantly and just a heavy, hard player to handle around the net, and that's going to be another test for the smaller D.
I had not been impressed with David Perron much, but he had a pretty good year, 23 goals and 6 goals now in the postseason. So that's a free agent guy they brought in who has worked out. I don't necessarily fear him, but he's on O'Reilly's line, and they obviously have some chemistry.
Yeah.
The other guy on the line is Sammy Blais, the rookie, who's been quite a story, and hits like 7 hits a game or something on the average.
He's a killer.
I think that line versus the Krejci line, if that's the way it goes, or you know, however, if it's Coyle maybe gets that matchup, that's to me the interesting.
Yeah, and you know, I think we've established now just talking about this is that people are saying about the Bruins and the reputation, there's the physical team, but I think they're the less physical team in this series, but they're the more skilled team. You know, don't far be it for me to say that and not be, you know, banned from Canada forever, because we know the Bruins are the ones taking hockey back to the dark ages.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's funny how the Blues got away with how many hits to the head against the Sharks in that series. I think they concussed every Sharks star player, but no one's saying they're taking hockey back to the dark ages.
Well, that's what I heard you guys on Skate this week, and what impressed Pete Blackburn the most, our tri-host on the weekend, was their ability to just hammer Erik Karlsson in that series.
Oh, my God.
So do they chop Chara down, or is it Krug?
They're going to try to do that. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, those lefty for sure, all three of them. But clearly, you know, Krug and Grizzly definitely are going to be the ones that are going to try and grind down. Maybe they, depending on who's out there, they back off from Chara a little bit, because you do have McAvoy out there. So if you try to grind too much, Chara's just going to bust the puck out on you, and you're going to be caught behind the play. But it's interesting to see that the Bruins have to match another team's physicality, or at least learn how to deal with it. They don't have to necessarily go out and hit more. They just need to be able to use their quickness and their speed to make them pay for going for big hits.
Like the Bruins have taken over games in the playoffs, the Blues had 22 third-period goals. That was second to Boston going into that Game 7. They had 24. So they've been a lot more tight games, a bunch of one-goal games, and you know, grinding through it, unlike Boston, who has, I think, what, like a plus-24 goal differential or something. By the end of it, it looks like the Bruins had a cakewalk compared to St. Louis.
Yeah.
But they're similar in the fact that the better team has risen to the occasion in the third period. Good third period team.
Yeah, I mean, that's what you got to be. I don't know that you can.
Yeah. How do you get here without that, right?
It's like, exactly. I mean, you got it. You can't have bad third periods. You don't see too many teams blowing leads in the third periods. And I think, you know, like you said, it looks like a cakewalk, because it kind of was. I mean, Carolina, they kind of gave up, especially in that fourth game. It was like,
totally.
It was kind of sad.
They were done in game one. To be honest, they should have won game one.
Right.
And when that flipped in the third period, it was over.
I think in retrospect, you're right on that game one, but I think they were really beat after game two, just because even the coach, the ultimate warrior character, player character coach now, the team takes on his persona, I think even he was kind of defeated after that second game.
Maybe you're right. Yeah, I mean,
he just had this hollow look on his face. He kind of had disbelief. I think there was a lot of satisfaction.
He had a good first 10 minutes in game three, and that was it.
Right. You know, there was some satisfaction there. There was two things. There was some satisfaction that, wow, look what we accomplished. No one believed it. And then there was Tuukka Rask psyched them out. I mean, there's nothing they could do. No matter what they did, they couldn't get one past them.
So the Bruins are favorite, pretty significant favorites,
Are they?
In Vegas, 60%, I think,
okay.
As far as the odds go. So here you go. The Blues, I would say most of America that's watching the series are also rooting for them. Just, the rooting favorite, not only with that young girl who, the cancer patient there, just like rallying around out there.
Yep. That's kind of scary. I think something like that. I mean, I hate to be the, I know we're supposed to all be at analytics these days, and we're not supposed to think about emotion, but those guys are really into that girl and playing for her. And
Layla.
It's interesting to see how it's motivated them to the Gloria thing, which I think is great because it's organic. Regardless of what you think of the song, it's so organic that it started with them being in a bar and asking for the song, and that it became a thing, not some forced.
Well, there were some
like,
Philly
for
fans
TV.
That were asking for it, and they got caught up in it. Right,
right, exactly. So. It's like it's just great to see organic things like that build up, and sometimes that kind of leads to a team of destiny kind of story, where you have to hope the Bruins know how to counter that and end it in a nightmare.
They're a good team. They have been for like the better part of 40 years, but they never.
Well, that's just
amazing.
Even coming into the season, they were a lot of people's Cups pick. I mean, you listen to these Canadian radio shows. When you're done listening to Sunday Skate, you go and listen to other shows, obviously.
Sure.
And then you hear everyone thought they were going to be that good, and I actually was the opposite. I looked at those signings, Bozak and Maroon, and I said, This is other people's junk. What are they doing?
Right,
I don't care. Pat Maroon's from St. Louis. That doesn't mean he's going to be good for St. Louis.
Right.
And he wasn't for most of the season.
Right.
But clearly they had
Game 7 double overtime winner.
Exactly. Clearly they had the right mix, and they knew what they were doing. And to know that they knew what they were doing by January 2nd just blows your mind. Imagine if the Bruins had been where the Blues were on January 2nd, what would the city have been doing?
Right.
First of all, they would have been ignoring them. No one would be talking about them, but the people that are, like me, who are paid to talk about them, we would have been ripping them to shreds. And if they took this tact where they didn't make any moves, we especially would have been like, what the heck is going on here?
They're lucky it was January, not February, right? I mean, they had to turn on then, obviously, but they won 11 straight.
Well, even after they won the 11 straight, I think, with the point system, I don't know how much farther they moved up. They probably were in a wild card spot at some point, but they were still in the pack, right? And so you're taking a chance that, okay, we're going to make the playoffs when you still weren't guaranteed, whatever the odds were at that point, to say that you're not going to be sellers, that the fact that they almost won the division is just no one could have predicted that. And I think even Doug Armstrong, their general manager, he kind of admits that. I mean, let's face it, you can't hide from the fact that you got a little lucky that this team really came together and started playing some great hockey, especially, like I said, the point system kind of discourages you from thinking you can make these runs. And now it's going to be interesting to see every team that's, 20 points out of a playoff spot in January is going to say, well, look what the Blues did. And so you have to hope that this doesn't depress the trade market and the trade deadline. Every team's going to think they can be the next Blues, just like a lot of teams thought they would be the next Kings when the Kings were the eighth seed. Ever since the Kings won the Cup as the eighth seed, everyone every year, it's, you just got to get in. Well, not really. You kind of want, and I think we're showing this now, right? I mean, St. Louis was neither of these teams were wild cards, right? The wild cards were finally dispatched. So, they had early playoff upsets, the wild cards, but you really want to have a better positioning, have some home ice advantage to get this far.
Well, the Perron signing, he's 30?
Yeah.
4 years, $16 million. I would have mocked that in the offseason.
Absolutely.
Bozak, 3 years at age 32 for $5 million per
year. Made no
sense. I would have mocked that.
Maybe on the other hand, while it might depress the trade market that they did so well, maybe at least it'll take people off this whole, if you're 30, you can't play hockey anymore. Two teams, right? You got Bozak and Perron are in their 30s. They get these big deals. They've performed decently. And by the way, the Boston Bruins are built around, up front, the two 30-plus centers, right? Bergeron and Krejci, who are not dropping off right now. When the analytic people are telling me, you can't touch these guys, you got to put in JFK or whatever young kid in there is going to be better at this point. So maybe it's, bucking the trend here. Maybe there's more studies to be done.
Yeah, although the Bruins have wasted some money in free agency, as we
absolutely
know.
But
David Backes is at the forefront of that, which is kind of ironic that he's going to be a major storyline in the series. He has become entrenched in the lineup, I guess. So
just like Maroon, I mean, Is he worth $6 million? I mean, obviously, it's out of the maroon class because of the money.
Yeah.
The $6 million is crazy. It was always crazy. What he's brought to this team in terms of character, in terms of leadership, and that they might have been lacking when they were missing the playoffs those years, that you weren't going to get from Louis Erickson, you're not going to spend $6 million. You're going to have to obviously figure something out after this year if when you want to get McAvoy and Carlo and Heinen signed and thinking ahead to DeBrusk the next year. It's a lot of work. But David Backes is, you'd hate to think where they'd be without him right now.
Right. I mean, we argue about this in the morning show about David Price. It seems like every month. Was he worth the $217 million?
Right.
They just won a World Series, but Callahan will still, to this day, say that was a terrible signing. A non-salary cap sport.
Well, it kind of was. I would say I hate to agree with Jerry Callahan, but you have to also factor in the attitude and how many distractions have there been with David Price?
Yeah.
All these off-field things, whether he meant to do them or not, I mean, the sarcasm that leads into controversy, David Backes was being healthy scratched for Carson Coleman and never complained, never even alluded to being unhappy, came out and talked all the time. I know for a fact was a chipper guy with the players, at least as far as they're telling me, on the bench, even the game where he was benched third period and against Toronto, on the bench, being a leader, pulling for his teammates, and kind of maybe knowing that if this goes long enough, I'm going to get another chance, so we better keep winning, and I got to do my part. I don't like that comparison necessarily. It's kind of a different element when you have a guy who's a real leader.
Yeah. Well, what about Backes? I mean, is he going to be a major part of this? In particular, because it's St. Louis, how does he handle against his former team?
He's going to be a major part of it because he's a lot of their physicality, and you're going to have to match that. And if Krejci and DeBrusk are getting nailed by, like we talked about, the O'Reilly line or the Bozak line, you're going to need him out there to kind of be a presence and be heavy on the forecheck. And those big guys aren't going to fall easily, so you're going to have to really get in there hard on them. And he's one of the few players the Bruins have that can do that.
Special teams, St. Louis had a bunch of goals early against Winnipeg, and then they went on a 2-for-28 slump and came out of it a bit, but they are not one of the top power plays in the postseason.
Yeah.
In fact, they had given up three shorties, so they like the Bruins, had been almost a negative at times.
Yeah.
But now Boston has been obviously thriving on the special teams play.
If you listen to Mike Milbury, he hasn't stopped repeating that the Blues line up their power play oddly and put their forwards on the strong side. It worked. In Game 6 last night, Tarasenko had the goal from there. But, yeah, I agree with him that there's no one-time threat there. So you'd have to think the Bruins could sniff that out pretty easily. And, yeah, I mean, the power play might be the one thing that might be really rusty at the start of this next coming series because you haven't really – you can put the penalty killers there out all you want in practices. You can't, duplicate what the other team does. So
most of Tarasenko's points in the playoffs have been on the power play.
Okay.
And I don't see him – threatening the Bruins 5-on-5. I think he's going to be totally erased in this series. I could be proven dead wrong about that. But do you see Tarasenko?
The track record says it. Look, if you put him in the class with Panarin, they pretty much stopped Panarin after the first couple games there. Especially
if they lose
five-on-five.
This series, they're going to get beat by, goals from the back end. Ryan O'Reilly is a big series. That fourth line's chipping in.
You should be able to cancel out that first line.
Binnington's
absolutely
great. Wasn't really tested, I guess, in a lot of the series.
There's no way to predict what's going to happen game one with this team. I can't imagine that they're going to be sharp. I don't care how many scrimmages and hard playoffs.
Yeah, I think game one's tough.
The Tuukka thing really scares me because when you're in that, I don't know for fact, but I'm pretty sure none of the famous goaltenders that have been in zones like he's been in over the years, whether it's Patrick Roy, whether it's, Ken Dryden, they never had to wait 10 days to play a damn game. And there's just no way to do it.
How's he holding up? You've been talking to him?
The only thing he's got going for him is that he is so laid back, I mean, I asked him about just what it's like to be home after a practice and you have 10 days without a game. And he's going in his routine. He's taking the kids to school, and he's playing with the kids, putting them to bed. He's trying to stay on the same pattern that he's been on, but it's got to be so hard. There's no way to duplicate the traffic and all the different elements of the game. Andrew Raycroft said that most of those saves he was making, a lot of those saves he was making against Carolina, he wasn't even seeing the puck. He was just in the rhythm to know where the puck was going to be coming from and hitting him. And that rhythm just ends for 10 days.
While I was on break, I was looking back at the loss to the Hawks in the 2013 Cup Finals. They took a 2-1 lead in that series. Rask had a shutout in Game 3. It's amazing when you think back to it that Tuukka is considered like the weak link of that
but
cup
by,
loss.
By who, though? Consider the source.
No one, I guess.
No one with any intelligence would blame him for that series.
Well, they lost the 6-5 overtime game in Game 4, and then obviously Game 6 he's criticized for. But up to that point,
right?
I was reading some of the articles back in the Globe. Rask was getting praised,
of course,
up and through Game 3 of the
Cup
Finals.
First of all, it was a strikeout. It was a lockout shortened season, but that was a historic team, a Blackhawks team that was loaded. Right?
Reload, and they'd won the cup 2 years prior.
So you start with that. Then you move on to the fact that Patrice Bergeron is playing with 13 different injuries the second half of that series.
Right.
They actually rolled out a line that had Tyler Seguin, Chris Kelly, and Dan Poirier. That was a line in a Stanley Cup final game.
Yeah.
You had Kaspar's Dargavans playing regularly. I mean, this Bruins, for Tuukka to get them to Game 6 alone was just amazing.
But the way it read through Game 3 was, this was going to happen. It was over. Like, the series was done.
Yeah, I don't remember feeling that way for sure. I mean, maybe the people at the Globe did because they watch hockey 3 weeks out of the year, but I don't remember feeling that way. You know, I mean, maybe, I think they might have, in fact, I looked back at it too. I don't think they even had a lead in Game 4. And then lost that game in overtime.
Yeah, Brent Seabrook.
Going back to Chicago for Game 5, you just felt like if they didn't win Game 5, they were in trouble. Now
Bergeron went to the hospital.
After
Game 5.
Right. So you felt like when they had the lead late in Game 6, you were going to Game 7. I mean, I had had my tickets booked for a while. I was going to go to the Mets-White Sox game the next night. I still haven't seen Comiskey Park. Thanks a lot, Bruins. But that clearly was not Tuukka's fault. I mean, Johnny Boychuk should have just bought some popcorn to watch those closing seconds. Andrew Ferentz was having troubles there, and they didn't close out. But again, they did it against a team that was so freaking loaded. When you look back at it's almost like for the era, it was a kind of like late 70s Canadian team. They didn't win all the cups in all the way the Canadians did, but the team had all the stars you're talking about. Right. And even Brian Bickell at the time, everyone thought he was the greatest thing ever, especially in the playoffs.
Yeah,
so.
I mean, the Bruins are hoping Jágr has like a rebirth that postseason.
Yeah. Well, that's just it. Jaromír Jágr didn't have a point the whole playoffs.
I mean, there's no comparison, right? This Blues team is nowhere near as intimidating as that Blackhawks team.
There isn't a team. I mean, the teams that were are gone. Tampa Bay, Washington, maybe.
That's what I mean. The Bruins are so lucky. You could not have scripted a better path to the Cup Finals.
There's luck involved, but nonetheless, I mean, that Columbus team is better than the record was, and they had... You know, we weren't denigrating them when it was 1-1 going to Columbus, and when they lost Game 3, I mean, that was a really good team. But you can't, I mean, the 11 team didn't have to play the Penguins, right? They didn't have to play Washington. Well, I think Washington was the President's Trophy that year. They're at least the top seed in the East, right? They didn't have to play them. So it's just, there's just the way it goes sometimes. The field clears. And, you know, they were one game from being eliminated. Twice they were one game from being eliminated, right? Toronto had them on the ropes.
You and Pete predicted they were out in Game 6.
So there you go.
Not to rub that in your face, Matt Stradamus. What's your pick on this series? I mean, we got some time to chew on it, but I do think St. Louis will win Game 1.
Yeah.
I think Boston takes over and they win it in 6. I think it's a...
Yeah, I was leaning towards 6, and I think I told Bradford 5 last night, just because every time you think it's going to be easy, it's going to be 5. But then he said... Everyone he knows was picking 5, so I said, oh, it's definitely going to go 7. So you never know. But, I mean, they really should be able to handle this team. I don't think – maybe they get by after a tough first period and get by that Game 1, because I don't think if they lose that Game 1, they're winning 4 straight. But 6 is probably your safest bet, and I think they're going to win. I mean, they really should at this point. You don't want to say that this season is a total failure if they lose this one, but this is an opportunity
that's
not going to come around every day.
You're right. You don't
it's only going to get harder. Toronto's going to get better. Tampa's going to regroup. Buffalo's going to get better. The West is going to get stronger.
Joel Quenneville's in the division.
Yeah. Joel Quenneville's in the division. I mean, some of these teams out West are going to get better. The Blackhawks will be back at some point here. You know, Vegas is not going away. This is a stiff test.
All right, before we go, Zdeno Chara, healthy scratch or was he actually injured?
He's actually injured, but he did get scratched in a scenario where he would not have been scratched 2 or 3 years ago.
The
factor is that
tactical scratch.
They have more depth now, and he is what he is. He's not your number one anymore. He's not a third pair yet, but I would argue that he might be a third pair next year, and if he's a third pair, that's a great news because that means your defensemen have taken the next step, and you can rely on a Grizzlick or a Vakanainen to play with McAvoy, and you can have Chara killing penalties and playing 15, 16 minutes on your third pair.
Well, that's why if they lose this cup final, it's not a disaster, you're still going to have what looks like a great team, one of the best teams in hockey next year.
That was the biggest takeaway from game four at Carolina, right? That you can survive the life without Chara, and the way Carlo and McAvoy have played has been amazing, I think, to see that they've grown up that quickly.
But that goes to two other topics I want to bring up on Skate this weekend. Pierre LeBrun, I thought, did a pretty good article on the cap balance of these teams that are left. You look at the Blues, you look at the Bruins.
Yep.
They have not been weighed down by stars making too much money. Toronto Maple Leafs, perhaps, in the future.
Yeah.
You know, you go through some other teams that have that problem.
Winnipeg Jets.
Although the Bruins were in on Tavares, and I'm still curious how that would have changed this team if they trade Krejci and go for Tavares. Like, that was their goal, right? They drew
Tavares
up the blueprint.
Tavares is still a really great player, and I think we saw how well he can play in the playoffs. He didn't put up the points just like Bergeron did it, but he was, you know, he had as much effect on Bergeron not scoring as Bergeron had on him, so maybe they canceled each other out. Maybe if Auston Matthews steps up a little more, you know, John Tavares has more room to score. But would have been a great player, would have been a great addition, and, you know, either way, they would have been fine, probably.
But and the other one, Down Goes Brown had a thing about, used to, the cliche was you have to have a top five Norris candidate on the blue line to win a cup. For a while, it seemed like that was the case. And you look at this St. Louis team and this Boston team, they are just solid, 1-6. It's not the case. Char is not that way anymore. Maybe McAvoy is, you know, rising to one of the best defensemen in the league.
Nope.
But Petrangelo had a kind of a down year, actually, by his standards.
Right.
So it's just a good group. You don't need maybe a marquee star anymore.
Yeah, and you don't need and you can have youth too. These guys are so young, especially the Bruins. I'm not sure about the ages on the Blues defensemen, but
actually they're pretty old. Edmondson's the youngest, 25. The rest are kind of veteran guys. Right. Oh no, Parayko. Parayko's 26.
Okay, so there you go. So that you don't usually have that as much, and yeah, I mean the game is changing in that way too, and of course. But this time next year, we're going to be talking about Charlie McAvoy and his $7 or $8 million a year, so that'll be different. But yeah, it's not the $10 million. It's not paying Tavares, Marner, and Matthews $11 million each and then hoping you can put together a defense corps.
Yeah.
But, you know.
Well, do you want to rip Dale before we sign off? I mean, that's always good for some fodder. You already called us the better hockey show.
Oh, we are the best hockey show, absolutely.
Yeah,
the best show, bar none, on this station. I mean, my God, where else can you get, you know, hot takes about Toronto, but also get, you know, leveled, deep analysis of the Bruins. I mean, you know, it's better than just agreeing with each other constantly and not having any debate.
Who knows what'll change by Sunday? If nothing else, we'll have Cranky Calvin up at 8 a.m. Join us for Sunday Skate. This is a special edition of Skate, the podcast edition. See you, Ben.
Hey, what's up, Flies? This is David Spade.
Dana Carvey.
Look, I know we never actually left, but I'll just say it. We are back with another season of Fly on the Wall.
Every episode, including ones with guests, will now be on video. Every Thursday, you'll hear us and see us chatting with big-name celebrities.
And every Monday, you're stuck with just me and Dana. We react to news, what's trending, viral clips.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.